Hello and welcome back to the Deadology Podcast from Pencil Hill Studio, New Paltz, New York. I'm your host, Howard Weiner. This is Season 2, Episode 36 of the podcast, and today is October 20th, 2024. It's the 40th anniversary of the Syracuse Carrier Dome show from October 20th, 1984. And that show is famously known for the amazing Jack Straw that closes out the first set. And we're going to dig into the show, audio highlights, and all that jazz. Doug was supposed to join me this week. We were going to do the 50th anniversary of October 19th, 1974, the Winterland show. But that will be next week's podcast. Doug had some business obligations and some Yankee baseball obligations. We're both huge Yankee fans, and we watched. He was at a game. We, you know, the Yankees in playoffs, it takes up 4 hours a night at least, you know. So, yeah, definitely time-consuming. But this year, the payoff was incredible because the Yankees last night made it to the World Series. They beat the Cleveland Guardians 4-1. And that Juan Soto, man, he in the 10th inning, he hit a 3-run homer. And I just marvel at that guy, man. He's incredible. Other elite athletes like the Michael Jordans, LeBron James, they're intense, focused as could be. And Juan Soto's the same way, except the guy's totally joyful and having fun and playing a game while being totally intense. I've never seen anybody like him, man. He's truly one of a kind, and he's going to be getting paid like one of a kind. And besides Yankee fans, the happiest person in the world right now is his agent, Scott Boras. But hey, I've digressed. We're talking Grateful Dead, 40th anniversary of an incredible show. So let me just do a little lead up the Fall 84 tour. Lead you up to the Syracuse show. Just review that quickly, and then we'll jump into the good stuff from that night in the Carrier Dome. All right, so the show opens up down south. I believe it was, I'm not going off any notes here. It was, I believe, Charlotte and Richmond were the first two nights of the 84 tour, October 5th and 6th. They were below average shows. When you're rating Grateful Dead shows, average is pretty damn good. And there has to be a few that are below average, and they were good shows, but you know, definitely below, not the best of the tour, not even close. So they go up north. Next stop, Worcester, Massachusetts, the 8th and the 9th. First night, really good first night in Worcester. Second night, legendary. In my opinion, the best show of the tour. Great stuff that night. I covered that on an earlier podcast, as well as the October 12th show from Augusta. That was the next stop, Augusta, Maine. And the first night, very much like Worcester, first night, very good. Second night, insane. The great Uncle John's, or playing Uncle John's drum space, playing Uncle John's Morning Dew. And yeah, either one of those shows has to be the best of the tour. I give Worcester a slight nod over that one. And then they go to Hartford. Grateful Dead go to Hartford for a couple shows, the 14th and 15th. And those were average shows, which means they were really good. There was Cat Rioter, Scarlet Fire. So, yeah, nice shows in Hartford. The tour plateaued a little bit here. They went to the Brendan Byrne, played two good shows on the 17th and the 18th. Somewhere around the quality of the Hartford, maybe a touch below. So the tour, after some spectacular shows, definitely leveled out a little bit. And I saw all 10 of those shows, the first 10 shows of the tour. And the final one was in Syracuse after a day off. Now, I couldn't make the Syracuse show. It was my brother's bar mitzvah that day. I would have skipped out on anything else. Any Jewish holiday, any family gathering, nothing would have pulled me away from that last show, except for my brother's bar mitzvah. So I had to go to that. And so I'm sitting there, and Brendan Byrne, or sitting, standing, enjoying the Grateful Dead on the 18th, but they played almost nothing that I wanted to hear. I was like, God damn, that show in Syracuse is going to be smoking. And it turned out to be a great show. I'd rate it the third best of this Fall 84 tour. This fall, it's a great little tour. I would rate the one from 83 as the best one I've ever seen, the fall tour from 83. And that one, too, ended in Syracuse, as did the 82 tour. The last stop was Syracuse. So they only played the Carrier Dome three times, 82, 83, 84. Each time it was the last show of the tour. 82 was a pretty average show for that tour. The 83 Syracuse was a little disappointing. They had played 10 great shows before. That's the most unbelievable tour I ever saw. But they played two nights in Worcester before going to Syracuse. I just think they were a little burnt out. And Syracuse was the worst show of that Fall 83 tour. But hey, man, this 84, they made up for it. Their final performance in Syracuse was never, like, as far as a place acoustically, a place to see a show. There was nothing memorable about it, but whatever energy they could tap out of the Carrier Dome in Syracuse, man, on this night, October 20th, they hit a home run. So let's get into the show here. By the way, talking about bar mitzvahs, I had to go to my brother's bar mitzvah that day. The strangest thing, man, I just thought of this the other day as I was getting ready for the podcast. Jack Straw, the first Jack Straw ever, was October 19th, 1971. So Syracuse is October 20, 1984. That's exactly 13 years in one day. So it's actually Jack Straw's bar mitzvah. So, yeah, I just thought of that the other day. I'm at a bar mitzvah, and then Jack Straw had been born 13 years in one day. Before, and that was, where was that? That was Minneapolis. It was also Keith Gottschall's first show, October 1971. They were having a bar mitzvah party of a different kind in Syracuse, man, than the one I was at in New Jersey, my brother's gathering. So the show opens up, 8-song first set, and there's really nothing all that incredible about the first 6 songs of this. You got a pretty hot Bertha opener, Greatest Story Ever Told follows, West LA, good song in the third spot. And when I was listening to the tape again, or not tape, obviously some kind of digital, listening to it digitally, it's a very bluesy kind of cool version, but the jams aren't that long. CC Rider, same thing. Garcia really doesn't go off on it much. So you got 4 songs in, no reason to get excited. Very good Ramble on Rose as the 5th song, and Brother Esau is 6th. And I was listening to this, I'm like, what's the catalyst? Where did all this energy come from where they played such a great Jack Straw to end the first set? And I think the answer lies within the crowd. The crowd was nuts on this night. You could hear it on the tape. They're very excited. And before Ramble on Rose, we're in the band, they do the Take a Step Back thing. Whenever they do Take a Step Back, it's bedlam's going to ensue. They're going to play a great version of something, as he did in English Town and Rochester 77. Always when they do Take a Step Back, things are going to get nutty. So we're like, you know, tells the crowd to step back. They play a little music. And then he comes back after Ramble on Rose, and now he's like serious. He's like, I wasn't kidding, man. You guys got to move back or the fire marshal's going to end the show. So it's just this chaotic scene, which is energy bursting, and the Grateful Dead would definitely tap into that as the set rolls along here. But just to start off the audio portion of this, I just think since it's such a catalyst, I took the 2 Weir speeches, the 2 tape Take a Step Backs, and put them together without break. So this is a combination of what Weir said before and what he said after the Ramble on Rose.
We're going to play a game now. And it's for all you people in the front. And what you're going to do is, when I count to 3, everybody's going to take a step back. And then when I count to 3 again, you're going to take another little step back. Just a little step back. Nice work, Dan. Okay, 1, 2, 3, take a step back. 1, 2, 3, another step back. 1, 2, 3, take a step back. 1, 2, another step back. 1, 2, 3, take a step back. 1, 2, 3, you see that? We all feel the breeze. Okay, y'all up front have got to move back or the fire marshal's going to close down the show. And he's got a good reason, because these kids up here are looking plenty bug-eyed. And so please, everybody move back a little bit. Okay? Do it now. Move back. Just move back so everybody can breathe. Just sort of waddle backwards. That's the only way you can do it. But do it. We gotta try this again. You gotta move back. Just sort of waddle backward. One, two, three. Take a step back. One, two, three. Another step back. One, two, three. Take a step back. One, two, three. Another step back. One, two, three. Take a step back. One, two, three. Another step back. One, two, three. Take a step back. Do it. Two, three. Take a step back. Come on, move. You've got to move back. And stay there.
There you go. And as urgent, take a step back as you're going to hear. So you can only imagine the intensity of the scene in the Carrier Dome that night. Deadheads just rushing the stage, enamored with the band. And from this point, they play Brother Esau. And I think the Grateful Dead just took a little attitude here. They were like, hey, if they're not going to listen to us, we're just going to blow them away with music. You know, just push them back with the power of our music. There's almost like an angry tone to the way they're playing, which is very unusual for Grateful Dead music. But after that Brother Esau, they go into Birdsong. Obviously, the first big tune of the night. So that when Garcia takes off on that jam, for the first couple minutes, it's as hot and as powerful as any Birdsong. Definitely not an all-time great version, but there's like 3 minutes of madness where he's just jamming real intense. Very unusual for a Birdsong, where it kind of develops in a chronological, logical sequence. Just some very intense, and they kind of set I call it the Carrier Dome motif for that night, where there's just going to be this very intense, almost angry edge to the playing, which is beautiful for for us listening to it in the future, for sure. So a very good Birdsong, and then it's time to call the bar mitzvah boy up to the stage, Jack Straw, 13 years old and one day on this night in Syracuse. End of the set, Jack Straw. Always, always killer. And I didn't make the show. The day after the show, I got a call from everybody I knew who was at the show. They were like, you are not going to believe this Jack Straw. So, I mean, when I got the tape from Doug, it was true what they said, man. This Jack Straw is everything you can imagine. It's like that incredibly hot and different from any other Jack Straw. Even Garcia's notes leading into the to the version are just like slicing and dicing, man. There's so much power behind this version. At times it almost doesn't even sound like the Grateful Dead are on stage. It's like some kind of possessed band up there. And we're going to play the whole Jack Straw for you. I'm just going to interrupt at one point to make a few comments. But it's such a great, perhaps the greatest Jack Straw of all time. I would call it the greatest Jack Straw ever. So let's dig in. And as you check this out, I mean, a lot of you know this, but the intensity in Weir's voice, it's uncanny, man. And just the way the whole band's taken off and Phil's bass playing, it sounds like it's going to collapse the Carrier Dome. Some incredible, distinctive, once-in-a-career performance of Jack Straw.
can share the women, we can share the wine. We can share what we gotta use, cause we don't share all the mine. Keep on rolling, just a mile to go. Keep on rolling, my old buddy, you're moving much too slow.
Watchman was outside the fence. His ring for bucks and change. Hey, that heaven sent.
Hurts my ears to listen, and it burns my eyes to see. Cut down a man in cold blood, Shannon. Might as well be me.
If only I was at that show, man. I would just, it's the intensity of the music. You know, it's end of the set, Jack Straw. They are going to shred that thing without a doubt. I would have been cowering under my seat or whatever, man. Just, you know, they are going to tear that Jack Straw apart. And just to trace the Jack Straws of this tour, it was very interesting the way they placed Jack Straw in their shows. October 9th, 84 was the first Jack Straw of this tour. It was the fourth song of the second set. I mean, that blew me away. You never see a Jack Straw placed in a anywhere cooler than that. It was, you know, just completely unexpected after Help on the Way, Slipknot, Franklin's. And it's a good Straw. It's I like it a lot. It's more chord-based than, you know, a heavy shredding from Garcia. But yeah, I have a love for that Straw. It's pretty incredible. Next, Jack Straw, Hartford, October 15th, and also unusual placement. It was the next to, it was the next song before they closed the set, and very hot. Jerry's ripping it up on that, probably a little bit from a Garcia standpoint, a little bit hotter than the one from Worcester, even though I find the one from Worcester a little more pleasurable to listen to. And then this Jack Straw, and I knew they were going to play Jack Straw. That, like, I'm a brother's bar mitzvah. I'm thinking they're doing Jack Straw. They're going to probably break out of Morning Dew, which they didn't later on. But, yeah, I knew the Straw was due, and, man, boy, did they kill this one. And I've had the pleasure of, over the last 40 years, of listening to it easily over 1,000 times. So even though I wasn't there, it's, you know, I haven't lacked for enjoying this Jack Straw, and just so happy they played this great Straw. So let's go back to that, and then I'll try to describe or talk about what they do, because it's really beyond description.
Leaving Texas, 4th day of July. Sun so hot, clouds so low, the eagles fill the sky.
Gotta go to Johnson, drink and ride. Gotta sit on one of the score, once more point of pride.
Any place a man can hide will keep him from the sun. Ain't no bed can get us rest now. You keep us. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Everybody move back.
Hide the women and children. The Grateful Dead are savages, man. They just shift into beast mode on this Jack Straw, man. Nothing like that, man. It's like a group exorcism. Just everybody is just playing, you know, like they're all playing kind of angry and just showing off. And it's like one of the wildest Grateful Dead jams you're ever going to hear. And my favorite Jack Straw for sure. But, you know, I can understand why someone might not like this as their best Jack Straw, because it doesn't follow the typical path where they kind of like, they start shredding and build to a certain point, then they go to the chord fanning. All the other great Jack Straws kind of follow that, the usual similar pattern you would expect. This whole thing is just completely out of control. You know, kind of breaks all the rules of Jack Straw. And even Weir at the end, like, they finish the set and Weir still kind of, he sounds like he's still pissed off. He's like, everybody move back, you know, and just such intensity and, you know, incredible stuff, man. Great Jack Straw. Yeah, kind of wish I was there, but hey, I love listening to that over and over again. And I have one of my friends, Alex, who was at the show, told me Jerry actually jumped during that Jack Straw, which I think I would need video evidence to believe that, man, because at this point, Jerry was pushing 300 pounds, if he wasn't over 300 pounds. In October, in November, this was definitely the most Jerry ever weighed. He really looked insane. He looked like a rock god. You know, he didn't look sick, but he was just so big, and his hair was out of control, like Bride of Frankenstein kind of thing, man. It was just, it was the eighth wonder of the world watching Jerry Garcia in 1984. So it's onward and forward to set two. Heads must have been spinning in the Carrier Dome during intermission after that Jack Straw. Just crazy, crazy Grateful Dead music there. So they come out, set two. They're still in, I guess, great spirits. You know, they're still pumped. Awesome Shakedown Street. They come out blasting it away. Very funky, quick moving. Perfect song to open set two of the last show of the fall tour on the East Coast. And nobody knew it at the time, but it would be the last show with the Carrier Dome, the Grateful Dead would ever play there. So Shakedown opener, and this Shakedown kind of follows that what's starting to become a Syracuse Carrier Dome motif, where there's just so much, they just burst into these jams with so much energy. I did a Shakedown Street special last week. I didn't put the Carrier Dome one in as one of the elite ones, top seven or anything like that, but this definitely could be in consideration. It's probably in top 20 of the Shakedown Streets for sure, because the jam is so hot. Garcia's just wailing early and often on this one, but it just doesn't have the exclamation point at the end that some of the others do, even though the singing is very attentive on this. So just an awesome night for the band as they start set two. And let's check out a little bit of that Shakedown Street jam. Thank you. great stuff there. Jerry just taking off about as quickly as I could think in any other shakedown that I've heard, man. Just Syracuse carrier dome mode, complete energy, going for it 100%. Let's lay it all on the line, last show of the tour. Yeah, so this 1984 at the end of the year was really some good stuff, because you go to, I think the next shows were the Berklee Community Theater shows. I think they did like a 5-6 night run out there. And those are, there's some really great shows in that run. So this is a very cool time. And the New Year's Eve show was also pretty hot from 84. Yeah, so the Grateful Dead are on some kind of roll. Anybody who doesn't recognize the brilliance of 83 or 84 these years, you're probably not a great, if you listen to the tapes and you say this isn't impressive, you probably don't like the Grateful Dead. I mean, that's all I could say. This stuff is brilliant, man. Okay, I can't imagine not listening to my 82, 81, 83, 84 favorites. These such good years. And so Shakedown goes into Samson and Delilah. And on this night, you know it's going to rip, because it's Syracuse, and it's the mood they're in, ripping hot Samson. And that was such a great combo. Shakedown Street didn't really have its partner in a crime. If it ever did, it was Samson and Delilah. Like Scarlet's Got Fire, Chinese Cat Rider. When they play Shakedown, it really could go into a number of different things, but probably the best combination, Shakedown, the most natural, was to go into Samson, because Shakedown would amp up the band just in the right way so they could shred a Samson and Delilah. And this one is definitely one of the best. Great Samson and Delilah follows. And there's been so much energy in the show at this point. Obviously, at this, they needed some space at this point, you know, like a slower tune just to kind of let give, you know, and the carry dome, it was going to blow apart at this point, man. So they go into He's Gone, nice version of He's Gone. I'm not sure if the last time they played it was at this point was Worcester, but they played He's Gone in Worcester, and it was John Lennon's birthday, and they followed it with Smokestack Lightning, the first time they played it since Pig's passing. And just the singing and the whole vibe of that, it was like a seance. It was one of the coolest things I've ever experienced. And it's definitely, you could hear it on tape, just an incredible He's Gone Smokestack. So they do it again here in Syracuse. It doesn't quite resonate in the same magical way that the one from Worcester does, but it's a pretty hot Smokestack, man. Jerry's doing some nice jamming. And being that this is the second version, I don't think they played it again after Worcester. This is the second version since Pig's passing. It was probably exciting for a lot of people in Syracuse who hadn't expected the Grateful Dead to play this Smokestack Lightning. And there's a real nice jam going into drums. So we got the drums, the space, good version of Wheel. They're not going to take the easy, it's a once again last show of the tour, but they're not taking any easy roads, no quick endings. Wheel into the other one. And this other one kind of took me by surprise. I didn't even realize how hot it was. The second instrumental on this other one is excellent, man. Jerry really does some nice stuff there. Once again, in the 80s, other one could be hit or miss. Sometimes they just didn't jam it out that long. But this one is definitely worthwhile. Very good version. They go into Black Peter. Jerry singing is awesome on this. Good version of Black Peter. And then they go into Turn On Your Love Light. And this is a freaking great version of Turn On Your Love Light. It's been always been one of my go-to Bob Weir versions of Love Light. Obviously, nothing compares to the Pigpen versions. But when the Grateful Dead brought back Turn On Your Love Light, I was at the show. They did it in Amsterdam in 1981 at that show. And then they did it in Alpine Valley July 7th, 1984. I wasn't in Amsterdam, but I was at Alpine Valley. And it was so exciting to see. But eventually, Love Light kind of settled into almost a cookie-cutter kind of throwaway song. Almost a showcase for Weir's falsetto singing. Sometimes if they weren't having a great night, they would just slip into Love Light. See you later. You know, quick crowd pleaser. Let's get the hell out of here. We'll try it again tomorrow night. And sometimes it came off. It was really good. This Syracuse version is one such example of where they play the Love Light's great. A couple of the ones from this time period, you got Philly Spectrum 4485. A lot of weird falsetto screaming on that, but it's incredible. The one from Amsterdam 81 I mentioned is pretty cool. Another one I really like is the Summer Solstice from 1989. The video was, I watched it on pay-per-view, it was June 21st, 89. Clarence Clemens on stage playing some sax, and Weird did a very respectful singing job on that, and just a very cool version. And this one, same thing. So, you know, Garcia's wailing, they're getting in some good solos here, and then they get to the end, and Weir, without going overboard, just nails this, man. It reminds me of, like, a great blues version of Love Light, like Bobby Blue Bland does a very cool version, and that's the way Weir's singing this, just very simple, but very right on the money, just, you know, and then the band with the climatic finish to it. Yeah, there's no doubt Love Light's, and it's a great, great song, a Grateful Dead classic, even though a lot of times it would be like a little bit of a down point for me because the show's over and they're, at times it felt like they were mailing it in and just playing an easy song. That was not the case on this night in Syracuse. It's a fantastic, fabulous ending, and let's check out the end of this Turn On Your Love Light.
I'm gonna get here too. Boy, got the dudes turn to him or her and say, how do you do? Then try smile. Don't take all that long, just a little while. You find it deep down inside. You got light, turn it off, and it gets strong, and it gets bright, turn it light, and you feel alright, feel alright, feel alright, feel alright, feel alright, oh, feel alright. Get your love light shine. Feel alright. Get your love light shine now. Feel alright. Feel alright. Feel alright. Feel alright. Get your love light shine now. Oh, feel alright.
Let your love light shine. Feel all right. Bob Weir barking out the orders once again. An incredible finish to the second set in Syracuse. And they come back encore. And yeah, this was definitely a special night. They played a Revolution encore. And I'm not looking at any statistics, but I think they played Revolution maybe 10 times. And this, I heard it this morning. I was actually surprised how good it was. Not much vocal flubs. Garcia takes it for an extra chorus. Jerry, even as he's singing this encore, you could tell he was in the mood this night, man. He was just having a lot of fun, a lot of energy. Last show ever in the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. And it was also the last Syracuse show. They played Syracuse in 76. So it was, I think it was the Memorial. Actually, yeah, I think this was the last Syracuse show. They also played there in a different Syracuse venue in 82, but yeah, Syracuse, a lot of good Grateful Dead shows there. This was definitely the best one in the Carrier Dome. Excuse me. And that's it for the 10/20/84 at 40th anniversary podcast next week. Doug Schmell will be joining me. He's going to be in great spirits because our New York Yankees are in the World Series, and the better the Yankees do, root for the Yankees, even if you don't care, the better the Yankees do, the better my podcast will be. Very excited about the Yankees being in the World Series. Hey, I'm your host, Howard Weiner. Thanks for listening. Catch you guys next week. It's going to be the Winterland 50th anniversary of that 10/19 show, one of the all-time great shows. So speak to you next week. Peace out.